Well, welcome. This is the breakout session for data-driven decision-making. I'm Eric Zygmunt. I'm a partner program manager in the developer division. This is actually my first time to the ALM Summit, so excited to be here. And following Whitaker is a little bit intimidating. So very entertaining, very energetic speaker. He talked about that evolution and that era and that know and do. And I'm going to actually bring us down to a little bit more practical area. Definitely that's where we're going. I think that we've got some execution that's going on today, tactical execution. That's what we want to talk about, getting to data-driven decision-making. This session is an experience review. So I'm going to share a bunch of experiences I've had here at Microsoft about data-driven culture, about trying to get organizations to move into that data-driven model. And I'm going to share those experiences. If you're looking for stats, if you're looking for deep math, if you're looking for code walkthroughs, you're not going to see it here. Right? I'm going to talk about the problems we've had culturally, the way we form teams, how we kind of got the mindset turned around, and ended up having lots of success in terms of getting to data-driven decision-making within a product team. So why data-driven decision-making? Given the conversation we just had with Whitaker, it's kind of hard to imagine why we're even having this topic. But in the era of big data and all the press and all the news about how to go leverage data and personalization, everything like that, the reality is many companies aren't really there yet in a real sense. They face a lot of challenges in terms of turning an organization, making scientific decisions, right? So let me try to do a little exercise here, and let's test our intuition. So in MSN, we were trying to optimize for revenue in the real estate site, and we created these two widgets. We actually created many variations, and we tested these. And the goal is to increase the revenue. So these were two of the widgets that we tested. And so why don't we see how everyone here is at figuring out what the best way to go is. Raise your right hand if you think A is the better model. Raise your left hand if you think B is the better model. Yeah, a little more visual, right? Reality, A was the better model, right? 8.5% better. That actually becomes a significant amount of revenue for MSN real estate. And it's very common that we make this mistake. Our perception, our idea of what people want is often skewed. Let's try it one more time. This is the MSN UK homepage. This is the navigation experience. The homepage is an unbelievably valuable piece of real estate. There is political fights about every single pixel on that page. Every product wants to get something on there in order to get more traffic to their site because they know more users means more success for them. We're trying to evaluate the difference in the navigation. The team that actually owns the homepage, their goal is to get users excited about the content on the page and to click through. Right. And so as we looked at this, we tried to figure out how can we optimize this experience. And we looked at the nav model. And we said, let's have a small nav model. And that brings content above the scroll line. By having a model like that, more content will be presented and will drive more users. Other school of thought was, we need the nav model bigger. People can't figure out where they want to go. By making it bigger, people will easily see where they want to go. We'll get more engagement and more clicks in our experience. Let's try it again. Let's raise the right hand if you think A is the better model. Let's raise the left hand if you think B is the better model. And obviously, don't raise your hand if you think they're the same. Let's actually stand up for a second, because I want everybody to see the intuition. Everybody, can you just stand up and humor me for 1 minute? So there's a lot of us in this room, right? And we don't have any objective. We don't have any bias. We don't have a political situation in terms of our career, right, in this. So let's go ahead and if you didn't raise a hand, go ahead and sit down. If you raised your left hand, sit down. These are the people with the intuition. A was 2.4% better for whole page. I think the big trick here is you're making a big trade-off. Go ahead and sit down. You're making a big trade-off here in terms of what you think is important. And one of the big insights here is the larger nav model drove 546% more clicks than the slim navigation model. So it was actually hugely more successful in navigating people into the network. Right? But what ended up happening is that experience pushed enough content below the page, the overall page click-through and engagement dropped. So sometimes things are counterintuitive, and you really need to get to the data to understand it. And really what we're talking about here is controlled experiments. And controlled experiments are just really trivial in concept, right? And they've been around for a long time, and it's not a software concept. But the idea is that you take users, and you partition them. You have a control group. You have a test group. You run the experiment. You gather the data. You analyze it. You really analyze it to understand it. And then you can make a decision. It's really the only way to understand whether changes are actually driving the behavior that you want. It's understanding causality. Whether those changes are actually being driven by the changes in the metrics are actually being driven by the changes in the experience you're providing, right? And not by random. So our intuition, really, the lesson, our intuition stinks. It's real poor. And experiments aren't really easy. They're complicated and hard in terms of getting it all right. It's easy in terms of concept. At MSN, 1 out of 10 experiments don't move a metric. So there's a lot of trial, a lot of error before you get something that works. And even when you get it working, it's not a significant growth. You don't hit the silver bullet. You don't hit it out of the park. So my experience with data-driven decision-making, let me give you a little bit of background of where I come from. I've been at Microsoft 9 years. I'm actually new to DevDiv. I worked all those 8 years in the online services division, all working in consumer properties. I spent the first 4 working in advertising. So I own the data collection systems. All the data, every time you did a search, every time you browsed a page, every time we served an ad, collected all that identity, all that data mapped to an identity. Right? I own the behavioral targeting system. I would take that and try to figure out, what ad do you really want? What bucket should I put you in? Actually, the ad system ended up deciding what ad to deliver. I just told them who you were. Right? So I own the behavioral targeting system. I also owned the email marketing program. So the platform that did communications, whether it was your communication for Hotmail, your monthly communication, or whether it was a marketing because we're launching Office, or whether it was an ad email because we had an ad email product, and trying to figure out how do we get people to open email? How do we get them engaged? How do we get the money that we want, whether from advertisers or by getting you engaged and clicking through to get to purchase product? So I spent 4 years there. And 4 years in ads, it's all about data. Advertising's been about data from the beginning, right? And so that data culture is there, and it's deeply rooted. After those 4 years, I moved over to MSN. Well, MSN was a media company, right? It's really a small media company inside of Microsoft, right? And so there's editors and designers, and they talk about voice, and they talk about abstract concepts and style. And so I was surprised to see that at MSN, which is just enormous in terms of scale, 500 million users, 21 billion page views, 500 million video streams. It's the number one portal in 20-some markets, right? It's got a big culture, right, of technical heritage being part of Microsoft. But that technical heritage was distinctly different even within the same online services division. Right? And so what I'm going to talk to you is how that organization started to try to move into the data-driven decision-making culture. And so I'm going to take on a little visual journey. This is about how MSN kind of evolved. There's great learnings in there that we had. There were enormous amount of successes. There were experiences that you wouldn't have thought you'd have, because as you think about data, you think about technology, you think about information, and some of the barriers we had to getting to that point had nothing to do with technology, nothing to do with software, had to do with personalities or structure, process. So let me take you through some of the visual journey, because it's entertaining if nothing else. This was the MSN homepage that we launched. So I came over there and I was the development manager for the MSN homepage worldwide. Now the homepage is an interesting property because it's a one-page website. How hard could a one-page website be, right? That one-page website drives 50% of the traffic. It is 50% of the page views of MSN. It is 50% of the revenue. Right? Unbelievable amount of dependency on that page and traffic. Right? It's the face of IE. When you open up IE, if you bought your PC from a lot of our OEMs, this is what you'd see. So it's amazing how much everybody cares about every little headline in that thing. So we launched a new page. It had a new style, a new look. It was design-led, right? Design-led product development, that sounds good to me, right? White space, fresh, clean, Skittle colors in the menu so people can understand that money is green or sports is yellow or whatever. So designers were all aflutter around the way this thing needed to be built. And on our way to go deliver this, we did testing. And we tested it against the old product. And the old product was all about link density. It was packed. Headlines were three words, and they had as many headlines in an inch as you could get. It was difficult. And this, in focus groups, performed very well. The reality was, it performed worse. And we decided to go ahead anyways. So that's data-driven decision-making at its finest. But we decided to go ahead because we had fixed the technology, and we had platforms in place that we believed we could iterate and move faster. We believed that we were on a pace to faster innovation that would lead to better business results. So we started making changes. We started that evolution. Some of these changes were small, right? They were tiny evolutions. Then editorial programming kicked in, and you see under the search box links that would appear. Each of these were really meant to drive our top KPIs. What were those top KPIs? We had many of them. We had search. How much search transfer? Bing was in the market, competing hard against Google. How much could we give them? MSN had its own business. We need clicks. We need to get it into various departments because we've got advertisers that have purchased ads for us. We had products like Internet Explorer, products like Messenger, products like Hotmail, because this became the front door for many of our live services. And so we had KPIs in every one of these categories. Literally, it was like 15 KPIs that were tied to products that had nothing to do with MSN. Right? And so we started making changes against KPIs that we owned, that we had to drive. Right? Small changes, like weather popping up on the screen. Content, him and hers content. And we would try that. And it was great collaboration between a team that had engineers, product planners, editorial staff, and designers who wanted the purity of the design. So you had a group of people from every discipline working, collaborating, making these changes together, and using data as the decision-making process. So as we made experiments, we learned that we weren't beholden to any of the changes that we had. So if somebody came along and we could bootstrap and jump on top of other technology, like Bing updating their auto-suggest, we would take it. Search history, sure, we had editorial flow over there, but if it performed better, we would override it. So we were making a lot of changes, and we were making them quick, and we were making them data-driven. We weren't beholden to our decisions, right? Weather, if we thought weather worked and when we put it up there, then we'd iterate on just that little feature. How can we get weather to be better, right? We moved it up the page, now we expanded it. It's 5-day forecasts, 10-day forecasts. If it got us enough of a statistical significance, it made it onto the page. For every one of these that I show, think about it. There's 10 that didn't get on the page. Right? And in the early times, there was a lot more than 10 that didn't get on the page because the ideas were all over the map. Right? Here we made big jumps. Sometimes they were little, sometimes they were big. We changed the whole header. Why? Search was a huge KPI, and we needed to make big steps, and we needed to change that header so we drove that KPI. this broke all kinds of rules, all kinds of paradigms that we set out from the very beginning. Designers, you know, we had designers leave the team, right? We changed it. Skittle color is gone. We changed some of our philosophy that we had at a business level. Top five, sports, lifestyle, money, forget what they are. Autos came up on top this time. We pulled autos up. Why? Realized that that auto's revenue was damn important. And so the business models, the business priorities changed. We had top level KPIs, but all the supporting KPIs were coming into play and shifting the team, and the decision-making process became even more complicated. We also ended up figuring out that we weren't really in control. Although we wanted to get to experimentation and data-driven decisions, it was complex. Why? A portal as a product is both technology and content. And editors had content control. And so from a technology, we may create a nav model, but it's hooked into the content management system, and editorial can make changes. So when we test things, we would pass it, and then what we'd find is it was kind of getting misused. And it's a lot like a lot of products. You don't understand how that product's going to be used once you give it over to the users. Right? Here what we had was editorial changing the nav menu, going seasonal, because they had seasonal deals that were done, and they decided we want to drive traffic to those seasonal deals, and the nav model is a nice way to go do that. Right? Now, our collaboration, where editorial was working hand in hand, right, in the data-driven thing, our process, our little team, that worked well for module-level stuff. But the smaller stuff, you know, it kind of just flowed through the content system. And one of the things you realize quickly when you're doing the data-driven model and you start looking at the data, little changes mean a lot. All the little twists end up changing the numbers. So, once again, new header. But then we bring back some of the old ideas, like the gradient, right? Search scopes are added, constantly iterating, trying to move that KPI. It's not one idea. We're not looking for silver bullets. You're constantly looking for change, statistically significant change. And you try again and again and again, and they build on each other, right? The year that we were doing this, MSN far exceeded its commitment relative to the search transfer rate, because we iterated. Every little change moved the needle up, right? If we were looking for that silver bullet, if we're in the room planning, product planning, design, trying to come up with the perfect solution, I don't think we would have gotten there. So one of the things that happened here was we got too good at search. And we decided our existing business is hurting. Our content engagement is dropping. So we unpacked tabs, right? So we had a tab model. We unpacked tabs so that more people could see the content more easily. One of the things we quickly learned was that unpacked tabs, well, that meant more performance problems, because we had engineered the system, because we're engineers, for high performance. When you do tabs, you can do lazy loading, and you pull content in late, and so the page can load faster. When you unpack the tabs, it was big. We had to change the way that we load the page to maintain the perf. So we're constantly fighting not just business metrics, technical metrics, and how that works, right? And this is a good example of when data-driven decision-making can go awry, right? We had unpacked the tabs, and we had many variations of the way that we wanted to unpack the tabs. And the variation that made it into production, not the best winner. It wasn't the best winner, and the reason why is what they call this executive bias, right? The executive data bias. And that's when a leader has an opinion, and he can cherry pick those metrics and use those as his rationale. And so the efficacy of the way that you do the evaluation is critical. And the process in which you take those decisions through the org is critical. Because you'll see this where these players who are obviously interested in the best outcome for the company, right? They've got their opinion, and they'll use that interest and that data to move in that way. They're doing it in the best interest of the company. They're doing it because they feel that's part of their job. But that decision process, if you really want to get the data-driven decision process, you have to control the way that you manage the data and you manage the decision process. And this was an insight that we learned as we kind of executed through. Another stakeholder has needs, i.e. comes along and launches. And we need to market. We need to promote. And it's to MSN's benefit. So we end up going back to the top banner that was in the old product. What does this do? It pushes content down, messes with all your metrics, right? But it's part of the business. It's part of having a complex optimization where you're trying to manage many KPIs, and they conflict with each other. This is a great example. The MyMSN in what we call the top hat shows up. It's a small item. It's an old product, right? But as we did experimentation, our evaluation was, if it's not negative, we'll move it forward, right? Which leads to a cluttered product full of features that nobody really cares about, and ultimately ends up being a negative experience and pulling things down as they stack up. So we ended up tightening up decision processes. Here we went wider with the menu, just eye-grabbing. Shopping becomes part of the scopes full time. You know, the executive comes in. As much as we tried to have a small team and define our decision-making process, we had a change in leadership. We had a reorg. We had new presidents of divisions come in, right? They had opinions. Those opinions popped in. Search moved up, or money moved up the column on the left. It was a goal to get more traffic to finance because that's a big revenue generator, right? As you'll see on the next page, even execs can learn something. We did what was called a reverse experiment, right? It's hard to go tell your VP you're not going to do what his opinion is, and you're not going to drive that. But instead, we would flip the experiment around, publish to everybody, and hold back a control group. And we'd run the experiment the other way, with the majority getting the treatment and a smaller group getting the control. And then we were able to show the data on why the idea wasn't to the benefit of the product. Here you see, lots of changes. Slideshows, number of slideshows that we did. The ads get bigger, so just lots of variations. Oh, and here, it's raining in Seattle again. Just wanted to point that out. Editors influence moves up again, so we shrunk that down, and then it got bigger. Constant, I'd say, political control battles. Even though we had data and we were driving for data decision making, you still have that. Making that transition, change is hard. I'll talk about some of the issues that we saw and how we resolved them as we kind of move through. Latino comes in, and this was another thing. Latino comes into the top hat, moves over. Does it conflict with the search scopes? Right? Latino drives traffic for us in the content. Does it conflict with search? Right? No. We proved it didn't conflict with search. Good data decision, we move forward with it. Well, if Latino didn't impact the search scopes, then we'd extrapolate. And editors would put, because this was editorially controlled, you know, editors or program managers, business decision makers would say, well, if that was true, then we can add more. And the reality is that would stretch out, and then it would ultimately conflict. Right? So extrapolations from one test, right, to justify another didn't work. A big learning that we had. Themes hit the page. So everybody loves the Google themes, right? You go to the Google pages, see how they spell their brand. And MSN wanted to kind of put themes on the page. This added page weight, became performance. So again, just a lot of conflicting metrics. And finally, even the brand guy gets his play. And I'll pop between those. And the MSN logo gets a little tweak. So I think in terms of looking at the stakeholders for a single product, it spanned the breadth of the company. It's spanned all the disciplines. Just to show you the challenge you can have in getting to a data-driven decision-making is that there's many players who have various viewpoints, and trying to pull that together is quite a challenge. So we had a lot of successes along the way. We had a lot of failures, and the failures were okay. We learned a lot. We learned about our process. We learned what we had to fix. We created new ways to optimize. Lots of pressure to move those metrics, not just to get to data-driven decision-making, but to get to the answers faster meant we had to get to tests faster. We had to get the learnings and insights faster. And we came up with processes and ways, and I'll talk to them as I go through the slides, that allowed us to move faster. And hopefully some of these would work with you. So how hard is it to get this right? I've been talking about all the changes. Some were good, some were fast, some were easy. I think we've got to first ask ourselves, what does getting it right mean? Right? The organization has to be bought in. I think we had challenges where the organization wasn't bought in, and they surface. So you got to get the organization bought into it. You got to get the supporting systems in place, an experimentation platform, a reporting platform, and not just systems from technology, but systems from process. They need to be in place too. How do you go and organize? How do decisions get made, right? How does that team execute? Where do decisions make with that, whether it's in terms of the product, in terms of the ship, versus the product managers and the product owners who are still there in the job because it wasn't a whole org that made this transition. And then how do you get to numbers that can be trusted? When I first got over to MSN, I thought one of the most interesting things was I would go into a meeting where we're discussing the product, and there would be people there with numbers. And I thought it was great. They were looking through the numbers. Well, the reality is we were looking at different numbers. We had two internal systems. We had Omniture. We had a variety of systems. We had systems that each sub-team would have to track their lifestyle site or to track the sports site. And we'd have partners coming in from Fox and whatnot with their own numbers. And so getting to a real number was hard, even when we were trying to do basic decision-making. When you get to test, I'll talk about experimentation. I'll talk about some of the challenges you get to getting a real number there, which is equally confusing. But one of the big challenges of having multiple systems, that becomes a significant problem. So how hard is it to get right? I think the state should kind of tell us, right? All the resources, big organization, huge investment, lot at stake, right? And where did we end up? You heard the stories. It's hard, right? The Republican camp failed when they tried to use the data to target the audience, to drive their execution, to make decisions on where to place advertising money. Right? So it's hard. Even organizations that have so much at stake can fail. So what do I mean by getting the organization bought in? What does that really mean? Right? It means that as you try to bring data-driven decision-making, you hit a lot of barriers. And you've got to get people who are committed to making the change. Right? And when I say people, I'm talking about the leadership. I'm talking about the middle management. I'm talking about the rank and file, the grassroots efforts. And it's tough because some people believe it threatens their job as decision makers. At Microsoft, product managers, program managers, that's their job. They believe their job is to define the next set of features, the next cool thing that's going to make the product great. That's what they do. The idea of them saying, I don't know what works. I've got three or four ideas. We should try them and see which one works. It's hard to admit that they don't know because that's the job they're in. They're supposed to know. It's kind of the culture. Right? Editors, designers, they get paid to select great design. They provide the voice, the expression, the content, the look and feel. Telling them that we're going to experiment, you're taking things that used to be in their control out of their control. Right? And changing what their job becomes. Right? Because those decisions were the things that they did. That was their job to them. And now what you're trying to say is, that's not the job. You still own the voice and the headline, but you don't get to choose the way that it gets presented. You actually might not even get to choose the order of the headline on where it goes on the page, what order it gets presented. We'll have systems that can help us understand that. Quite a big of a challenge to try to take people's mindsets whose jobs they feel threatened about the function, about the accountability they have, and shift that. And failures of ideas hurts their image, right? They've built up a reputation within the organization as that leader who understands entertainment, as that expert in finance, and shifting that culture. And this is from a content management perspective, but I think that's true with all products. Somebody in a product really understands social and social features. Somebody really understands UX experiences. Right? Somebody's really the technical genius. Right? And really what we gotta say is, let's let the data decide the outcomes. Right? So how do you tackle that culture challenge? There's plenty of books on culture challenge. I'm not going to tell you how to go do that. I'm going to tell you some of our experiences and what we did. A big part of it was awareness and education. At MSN, it had 14, 15 years of being a product out there in the market. It had been promoting news from the beginning. And I thought it was very interesting when I came up to MSN and I saw the main floor. On a wall, they had every year a picture of the homepage and the experience. And yet, it wasn't long before I realized they all had weather. They all had stat quotes, right? They all had the sports scores. They all had, it was just really variations of the same theme. And so when I learned that the decision process for that evolution wasn't as data-driven as I thought, it was clear we had to bring some awareness to it. So awareness and education on what it is, why it's needed, how it works, has to be done. Changing perspective and getting alignment, getting people to appreciate what that means, and getting their perspective to change, whether that's about their job function, whether it's about how decisions will get made in the organization and who has accountability, where accountability ends up falling. Getting alignment so that you put the things and tools in place to drive that behavior. Right. So one of the things we did for educating leadership is we really shared a lot of industry examples. You can share competitive examples. If you've got a product out there that you've got your competitors, there's probably competitive news. There's a lot of people already in the space. They may be ahead of you, right? The other thing is you take examples that aren't even technology. The culture of experimenting, right, doesn't start with software, right? It can be process. It can be packaging. It can be product, right? And really what you're trying to get leadership to understand is it's a whole philosophy of operation and execution. And so using the Netflix example, you can see the evolution of the product. And they tested and they trialed. And I don't know if you had a chance to read some of the verbiage there, but they went to plastic. And then they found out it inflated on planes. And then they punched a hole in the plastic casing. And then they decided that it wasn't good because of recycling and customers didn't like it. And so they evolved and they listened to customers. Now, was that focus groups? Was that data? I think it's a whole set of different things. But there's many examples out there that you can go leverage that you can educate the leadership on. The rank and file, the bottoms-up approach, the grassroots, however you want to call it, can be done as well. This is actually kind of an interesting story. A team in Microsoft actually built the technology. That's the experimentation platform. It didn't even come from MSN. We didn't sit down and say, okay, we're going to get data-driven, and here's the technology we need to build to get data-driven. There's another team that was actually promoting making data-driven decisions. And we looked at that and saw that a fast way to go and adopt and get on board. They were educating the ranks, and that's kind of how it started to bubble up. How did they educate the ranks? They put posters up. They put posters everywhere, usually in pairs. They actually experimented with their posters and put them up with different URLs, and then were able to measure which poster drove more people to the page, to the site, to learn about experimentation. So they lived and breathed the data decision culture. Right? They put them in weird places. The slogans were interesting. This one was the one that actually ended up winning at one point. They created controversy, right? There were people in the organization who said, boy, those posters are threatening, or we don't like that idea. Why are you trying to tell us about our product, right? Here, they had to take a turn, and actually, that was the end poster that they had, experimentation or die. The idea is that you'll go extinct. And a nice quote from Google's Hal Varian. So let's have a thought experiment, because now as we think about getting people educated and awareness, the harder part is the perspective and the alignment. So there's something we call overall evaluation criteria. What are we really trying to optimize? So here's a thought experiment that we have. So if Tiger Woods came to you and asked for advice on how he should spend his time to optimize his revenue, he gets most of his revenue from ads, as you'd expect, right? Short term, he can improve his ad revenue by focusing on ads, right? Optimize his lifetime financial value. He needs to focus on his game. You know, where should he put his time? You know, I think it's obvious. He needs to be successful in his career in order for the advertising revenue to come through. But you can see how you can easily take a short-term view of it. And in business, we take a lot of short-term views. And so getting to an overall evaluation criteria, it has to actually be a long-term view. And that's a challenge, is getting people to actually line up against an approach to measure the long-term view. If you remember one thing from this talk, it's the overall evaluation criteria, right? Agree early on what you're optimizing, and it's complicated. In MSN, was it clicks? Or even on the MSN homepage for the product, was it clicks? Was it clicks on the page? Was it transfers to search? Was it promotion of other products like IE? Was it ad revenue? Right? Was it user engagement? Was it returning visitors or the number of visits they would have in a given week? Did we want them to come frequent or just keep coming? Right? So there were lots of ways to look at our customer, lots of ways to measure our customer. What were we really trying to optimize that was going to be the success of the business? Right. Even though you're measuring that, the last point's important too, you measure a whole lot of metrics. Even though you're trying to optimize a couple, you measure a lot of other metrics, and those metrics actually provide a substantial amount of insights that increase create new hypothesis that you want to test. So what's valued? Interesting story. Really what you want to change is what's valued, right? Failure, right, is something that in business tends to be avoided at Microsoft, at MSN. People didn't want to ship a product that was considered bad. And in fact, really, failure was missing the deadlines. Shipping was the success. We celebrated the ship. We hit the deadline. We hit the feature. We got it out the door. No bugs. Success. Right? And people were working to avoid failure. The mindset that has to change isn't worrying about the failures. It's worrying about the mistakes. Mistakes are different than failures, and you have to separate those two. And you really have to get people to understand that failure is not bad as long as you're learning. Mistakes are bad because it's a waste, inefficiency, and unproductive. And really, you just got to be focusing on celebrating successes that move metrics. And failures are part of the process of doing that. So leadership that encourages that culture of experimentation, it's all about learning. Right? As I said, you can learn from flat results, you can learn from negative results. Even if an idea fails, you learn something. Big part of this culture change, sharing that information. Sharing that information. It's amazing how hard that was to take documents that explain what the experiment was and the data that we found from it and what the learnings were from it, and then sharing that outside of the team that was doing the experimentation. Sharing it to editors, sharing it to designers, sharing it to program managers, sharing it to the engineers and the devs and the test. It was very threatening, because that vision of failure. And it also felt like we were arming people who were against the data-driven decision-making. We're showing them how things aren't working. But it was actually an unbelievably important thing. It built credibility. It built trust. Now, the last one's kind of hard. Right? When possible, adjust the recognition system. Right? Rewarding for shipping versus rewarding for moving the metrics. When you're in software development, it's about schedules, it's about timelines, it's about deployment. And so shifting that mentality is very hard. So in summary, in terms of culture, you gotta drive it up and down the organization. There's different approaches. These are some of them. There's a lot more. Share information broadly, I thought was unbelievably valuable in terms of getting people to buy into it. It was really softening the road for getting more and more people to engage in it. Define a durable, leadership-approved overall evaluation criteria. Really the top item, right? Get the metric understood. And that metric can be a very complicated metric. Make sure the supporting systems are in place and the numbers are trusted. These are the other things that you have to make sure of getting it right. So we took an interesting approach. We started with a small team because as much as a lot of people were getting aware from the posters and the information that experimentation was there and we should be using it and we should be leveraging it, we couldn't take it at a big scale. But we knew where the impact would be. The impact was on a homepage because that's where the volume was. And that's where the biggest influence of the metrics. We could have done experimentation. We could have taken it off in the corner, and we could have done it in the beauty section of the lifestyle channel, right? But the impact wouldn't be there, and the outcome wouldn't be as important. We took it and it hit one of the most impactful parts of our product, but we did it with a small team, and we included all disciplines. Right? It wasn't just engineering. It was designers. It was editorial, right? We set principles to allow for autonomy. We defined that criteria, and we said, here are the metrics, and here's the rules on how you can go publish. Right? You can take your feature to production as long as you move the search metric up, and you don't take customer engagement down. Right? And here are the other metrics that we want you to keep an eye on. And then we let them run. We gave them autonomy to start the experiments, to start the cycle. To tackle easy, small wins. We really had them focus solely on visuals initially. Just the visuals, little simple things. You saw the weather bugs. They pop up on the page. Did it help? The scopes. There's not tough engineering problems there. Simple visuals. And then you grow from there. Eventually, you're doing experimentations all the way back into content serving and headline optimization systems. Right? But we started with little visual treatments. Last one, keep senior leadership out. Make sure my boss isn't in here. But as you saw, right, there's a lot, whether it ends up being cherry-picking data items, as I talked about, or whether it's I have an opinion and comes over the top with it. You really want to get that autonomy based on those principles out. You want to get the leadership bought into that, and then you keep them out of the actual execution process. And I stack the small team with risk-takers and what I call cowboys, right? People who really wanted to change what we did. Some of them were new to the team. Some of them had been with the team a long time and frustrated, right? And you see, stack the team with that. People who would come up with ideas and just want to get them out quickly, right? And then we had to change management's role. We had to say, your job isn't anymore managing the schedule and monitoring the schedule, right? Your job is to watch, adjust, and enable this team, right? Break some rules. The way we moved features into production took literally months. It was insane that it would take months to move a feature into production for our website. But it did, right? At the scale you're at and everything. And we broke rules. We changed it. And we said, for these things, we're going to treat them like hotfixes. We're going to roll them in right away, right? And it was a big problem. It was a big concern for an operations org that didn't live inside the product team on the way that we were changing things, right? The manager becomes ensuring the right objective and the focus. It's amazing how all of a sudden those metrics can skew, right? And you know, the editors are focused on the content, but this, who's the representative for the search transfer in there when I talked about that team? So it's amazing how that emphasis can change. It's the manager's job to focus on that. Ensure the efficacy of the process, that whole decision process, the whole number, evaluating the number process, making sure that the technology actually has the data quality that's required. I mean, ruthlessly drive overall data quality. The manager's job wasn't really looking at the experiments that were being run and what features were being done. His job was making sure that the testing system and the data quality was there, that when the page shipped, beacons were collected properly, cookies were set properly, that you could measure them, that you could run AA tests and have the data come out consistently, that at a 95% confidence interval, only 1 out of 20 of them show the randomness, right? So really driving that quality, the manager's job changed, only in that small team, right? And then we grew from there. So you leverage your own technology stack. So as you think about implementing this in your own system, I think here's the shameless plug. You can leverage your own technology stack. At MSN, we had another team that had built it, and then we got on it. But you have to worry about identification. You have to figure out how you do treatment assignment, right? How you end up getting the statistical volumes appropriately into the control, into the treatment. Where does the reporting come from? Where is that data, and how does it get processed? So you can leverage your own stack, and you can build it, and there's lots of great platforms and technologies, some of which I got up on the screen, or you can start a service. The technology implementation, it varies. I mean, I've looked at Yammer since we've been here. We've looked at talked with Skype. We had MSN. We had a product team to product team, and everybody who's kind of starting it kind of a little bit rolls their own to get started, right? So some of the paradoxes that we have, and I'm going to start popping through these quick. UC Berkeley admissions, medical treatment. Really, this is the weighted average issue. Baseball player, partway through the season, you look at his batting average, and player A is better than player B. Second part of the season, player A is still better than player B. You add the numbers up, and it turns out that player B is better. Right? And so it really just comes down to the weighted averages. How does that happen? That's the math lesson. Depending upon the number of games that are in this part of the season versus that part of the season, it's just something you got to watch for in terms of understanding how to get to the right number. Right? There's a lot of stuff in the math in which, as you dig in, getting to the right number is difficult. Getting to a number is easy, and people jump at numbers. Right? They jump at numbers. Experiment starts to ramp up. You've only got so much volume and traffic going. People see numbers moving. They want to declare victory. Those numbers play out over time. That's exactly this average game. By the time the experiment runs in a duration, then you end up having reality. So here's an example of what you measure matters, right? So here's a test, new design for Office Online. Two pages, real quick, trying to optimize. They decide they're going to optimize clicks to revenue generating links. So those are the things that were circled in red. Care to guess which one's better? B was worse, right? Is that the right outcome? if you look at it, what you'll realize is the cost is on B. So of course B is worse, right? People don't like clicking on things that say this is how much it costs. But the reality is the people who clicked, guess what? They converted better. They were more qualified leads. They actually drove better traffic, right? So what you measure matters, right? Even if it's hard. The team said it was hard to go measure all the way through to conversion, right? But if you don't do that, you really don't get the right result. So even if it's hard, you got to go measure it, right? So lesson, measure what you really need to measure, even if it's difficult. Oh, actually, good point here. Figuring out what you need to measure is hard. This is that overall evaluation criteria. What's good for MSN homepage? Like I said, there was a lot of ways in which we could look at it. Well, what's good for Yammer, right? They've got their own metric, a unique metric that really defines how they optimize their experience in terms of a social network graph, engagement, and it's pretty interesting. What is it for Bing? Is it distinct queries? Is it how many search pages that a user has to view in a search, right? Well, they could end up clicking on that first page. Well, is that success? Well, maybe not, right? It depends on what you're trying to drive and what the relevance is on the other side. So Xbox, Visual Studio, we all have different ways that we have to think about our customer. This is kind of interesting in MSN. You make a change in MSN, if you make a significant change, it always goes down. It always goes down for a good part of the audience. And it goes down because people aren't sure where to go. Other parts of the audience, it actually goes up because they're interested. Oh, something's different, let me go look. So depending upon your product, you're gonna have primacy effects and you're gonna have novelty effects. And you have to kind of understand that in your product. And that's why tests should run for a longer period of time. And you gain those learnings. And then once you use those learnings, you can incorporate them in your test to understand that you're gonna have those effects. Ghosts in the machine. Okay, this is my term, ghosts in the machine. Really, everybody just says this is bad data. This is bad tracking, bad telemetry, right? In web pages, you use beacons, and the browsers and the internet is lossy by definition. Cookies churn, so counting users is hard. Cookies churn, which means you put people into treatments, and then when they come back, they end up going into control. How do you go manage all of that? Those are the challenges, really, and they're constant. They're constant. The new browser comes out, and the way it caches is different, right? We have some browsers end up dropping or cutting off the beacon when the person clicks. And so you have higher lossiness with Safari or Chrome than you do with IE, right? So the challenging reality is telemetry is hard. It's hard no matter what your product is. It doesn't matter whether you're a browser or whether you're phone-based, because all of a sudden there you've got data that comes in batches and not associated with the time that the activity actually took place. Lots of challenges in that. And finally, what you measure isn't even what you learn, right? You are measuring and optimizing towards that goal, but it's amazing all the stuff you learn that isn't about what you measure, right? Whether that's about your product and about how users use your product, the way they use it, the new hypotheses you get and test and validate and had no idea happened, and the other things that you learn around the way the organization needs to work, the processes you need to go through to make it work. So those are some of the insights that I had, driving experimentation in through MSN, getting them to data-driven decision-making. And we did make huge successes. We do experimentation on all those top properties. It's not quite part of the entire culture. Changes still fly through very quickly based on highest person's opinion, right? But we also have areas where it's taken hold very strongly. Content optimization, relevance systems, where headlines are being automatically selected. Those happen in markets where there's less editorial staff, where it mapped easier to get through the culture, right? So you gotta pick your places, you gotta get the foothold, you get the wins, you build the credibility, and then you grow from there. And it's a journey. It's not a destination. So what are some of the portable lessons? Understand your overall evaluation criteria. Start small and expand from there. Be rigorous about data quality. Nothing kills you faster than explaining a test and then finding out that that test was completely wrong because the data was wrong. And it's amazing how many times you find that because the ghost in the machine comes up and you got a restatement. So really being rigorous around that data quality is important. celebrate metrics, not features. Huge point. Celebrate the metrics and not the features. And that's a change for the way that we run projects. And I got a link here. I don't know if people have seen this before, but this is kind of like what success might look like if your whole organization is wrapped around a data-driven culture, and it's a little self-serving because it's a Microsoft property. Although we won't show it on a Microsoft property. We'll use YouTube here. Maybe I don't have the audio. Let me see if I got the audio here. Oh, you're not seeing the video. I got it. I can't get the audio any louder here. This is the Yammer team, and they did the take on Call Me Maybe. Yeah. And now it's in my way. The whole team really lives by the numbers. They don't ship without the numbers working. The KPIs had just fell, and now they're in my way. I trade my soul for uptick. Pennies and dimes need to stick. I wasn't testing for this, and now it's in my way. Chi Square was holding Jack. Their engineering teams don't own products or feature sets. They're small teams. They move every couple months to a different part of the product. They don't have an ownership and say, that's my feature, that's the thing I own. What they own is the metrics, the overall business metrics. And in any one product area, that's their goal, is to move that metric. And you see a lot of enthusiasm for it. They actually have a product team that's analytics. They consider it part of the product. It makes sure that there's efficacy in the data, that engineers can get to the data quickly and can understand the data quickly. It's part of the product. They don't ship features unless the numbers work. What that means is their product's not as cluttered. It's clear for the user what they're trying to go do. They didn't start with this culture. They put it in place very early, but they didn't start with it. So anyways, an interesting culture that they've got there. And one of the things Microsoft did was keep that culture separate, right, when we acquired Yammer. It's an entity, and it executes on its own. And that culture is a very modern culture, and looking to bring that type of data-driven decision-making into other parts of Microsoft. So thank you for your time. And that's the end of my talk. If anybody has any questions. You know, the management was actually supportive, and the reason was the management wanted things to move faster. They didn't say break the rules. What they said was in essence, we need to see more successes. And in order to do that, we had to have more tests. I think the quote was up there that says, if you have to kiss a frog to find a prince, kiss a lot more frogs and kiss them faster. And so we broke rules. We broke rules around deployment. We broke rules around testing. We had a massive test matrix. It's funny, for the MSN homepage, we were like, when I came over, we had sunset supporting IE6 not that long ago. So our test matrix was huge. And we said, you know what? We don't need to do that. We don't need to test against that whole test matrix for the experiments. That's just crazy. 9 out of 10 fail. So we looked at our browsers, and we looked at the behaviors, and we ran a bunch of tests and segmented the data by browser to understand what the impacts were. And we started writing products and experimentation that was only for IE7, which was painful, right, for people who understand the quirks. But it allowed us to get tests out faster. It meant it passed through tests quicker. We got into production faster. And we only let IE7 customers into the control in the experiment. And what we would do then is we would fail fast. And the things that looked good, we didn't take as golden. Then we'd take it and we'd run it through the test matrix and we'd run the other tests, right? But it allowed us to fail fast. That was one technique where we cheated. The other was treating things as hot fixes. We had all kinds of ways in which we started to break processes and remove barriers. Ultimately, MSN moved to more of a DevOps model where we own the deployment, where the dev team deployed. And that also was a big impact to our pace. Yes?
So you mentioned a lot about metrics. How do you know which metric to choose?
Yeah, how do you know which metric to choose as you're doing it? You know, it'd be great if there was a simple answer, but it's very product dependent, right? And it's also based on the type of business model that you have. Yammer's model, its metric, is an interesting formula that that measures the social dynamic that a feature will drive long term, right? MSN's metric is a complex formula that includes many top metrics, like I said, search, whole page click through, right? Advertising revenue. Clicks are actually weighted on the page, right? Clicks at the top get less count for a click than clicks that are lower because of the value. We actually focused on certain metrics and had to shift. We put in a relevant system that would optimize headlines based on users' interest, and we would get lift over editorial. And big success, data-driven, big success. Well, yes, when you're in the content space, if you want a lot of clicks, make the headline salacious, right? If you want Britney Spears all the time on the page, it's not really a great way to run long-term metric. And so we had to put changes in place. A click to finance was more valuable than a click to entertainment gossip. And we put weighting in the content and where the traffic was going. And so then we started to optimize for click value. Right? And then we realized that's great, but we have partners who have ad revenue that they sold in autos, and now you have to get autos in there. And so you have to artificially create value for where you're trying to traffic shape. And so our metric became a very complex high-level metric to measure. And I think they're very product-specific, and they're based on the value proposition of your product and what your business is trying to go do. Anybody else? In terms of the actual development engineering process, all the metrics that you guys would expect from your ALM process, burn down rates, bug counts, are all metrics that we use in the engineering process. I don't know if those metrics are something that we're driving to impact the business like we're talking about here, because we're talking about the user experience. could we say, well, let's use those metrics to test our development process, just like Netflix used it to test their packaging, right? In other words, the experimentation can a process can be tested. Now, like when they were doing the awareness for the actual experimentation system, they put out multiple posters and tracked which poster actually got people engaged. Can we come up with a metric in the way we look at our dev process to see if those metrics are moving properly and whether or not our development and engineering process is improving and do experimentations? Yes, I think the hard part there is the project, the A-B control part is going to be very hard. So what you're going to be comparing is project A to project B. And those differences are going to be significant in terms of the impact. So control testing in that process may be a little bit challenging. It's not unlike the way when I got to MSN, they were trying to do data-driven decision-making, but when they would run a test, what they would do is they would run something for a week and compare it to the prior week. Well, when Michael Jackson dies, that doesn't work, right? When Michael Jackson and Farrah Fawcett die on the same day, that doesn't work at all, right? So really making control and test or control and treatment that same user experience to get that to get those metrics to work is important. I haven't really thought about doing it in the development process to try to optimize the development process itself. It's an interesting problem. Any other questions? And we'll call it a wrap. Yeah. Yes.
So how do you have certain KPIs related to the content quality in the basic MSN portal as well as the other 26 languages portals?
Okay. I think I got that question. Let me restate it so people can hear it. The question was, MSN's in many, many different markets, and there may be cultural differences. And so do you have KPIs that are different by culture, and how did that work with MSN? So I first got to give a little bit of an explanation for MSN. MSN's in all those markets, but the way that engineering was run and the way that MSN was run when I first joined, I likened it to a sandwich shop. Engineering would publish features, and then each market would decide what they wanted. So there was no consistency on page design, page look, page feel. So an experiment on one property didn't work with the other property. There's no standard template of look and feel, which makes rolling out an experiment worldwide very difficult and very challenging. And there's another organizational boundary about getting to data-driven decision-making, how you manage a product as you go across geographic boundaries. They were even built on some different technologies markets. So one of the things that we did when we launched that new homepage is we rewrote some of the core infrastructure, and that did roll out to all the different markets. And all the engineering metrics that were consistent, obviously page load time, perf, all that, then became something that we could measure consistent because of the same technology stack. And we compare that to the types of components that market put onto the page, right? But in terms of being able to have cultural difference, the cultural differences in terms of the metrics, they weren't there, but the products were different. So in other words, if we were focused on whole page clicks, everybody's focused on whole page clicks in all the markets. That's what we're trying to go drive. Now, the difference was each market had a different product to go manipulate, and they also had some market-specific variations. Go look at France after 6 p.m., you know, homepage. You won't see articles and pictures like that on the U.S. MSN homepage, right? And so they have different ways they can drive stuff other than the experimentation. So just you know, market variations exist. Depending upon the type of the product, a content product probably has that pain point a lot more. Dropbox, probably exactly the same in every market, right? I mean, so it really depends on the product. For a content product, it was very challenging, and it ended up being that we had experimentation going on in Brazil, and those experiments were different than what we had going on in the U.S. And then we would broadly share those learnings, and teams would go, wow, that worked for the U.S. The U.K. slim header, U.S. tried it, and that's why we moved. Okay. Thank you.